Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
The Bernstein and McKnight Show.
Moncada drills this ball right field. The only question is which deck. It's a two-run homer. A comet out of Progressive Field. And it's 8-1.
Middays on the Score.
Crazy. Why not?
That ball was hammered.
Yeah, that ball was just wrecked. And the guy on the call right there was Jason Benetti, the voice of the White Sox. He's on Twitter at Jason Benetti. And he joins us here live at 1-2 Prue. It is our Back to Baseball live broadcast brought to you by Redemption Rye Whiskey and Sweetwater Tavern and Grill. Hello, Jason.
Hi, Dan. Hi, Connor.
Hi.
I have two thoughts. One, the ball landed in the first deck, but that's beside the point.
But you didn't predict which deck.
No.
You said that was the open question.
It is the question. Right. Number two, the Ozzie Guillen boom, boom, boom that we just heard during the update needs to be put to music
it
from
does.
That song from
yes.
the 90s, boom, 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 boom. I want you in my room. Isn't that the lyric?
Probably.
I'll take your word for it.
You never heard that song?
I'll Google it.
We need to do that.
Well,
hi, guys.
Well,
hi,
how are things?
Black Eyed Peas did a boom, 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 too.
Yeah, there's that one for sure.
I'm sure Tanny's already remixed it in his head, and he just has to get it onto SoundCloud. So how's this for a slash line? Yoan Moncada, 450, 522, 900. It is a weighted on base average of 589 and a WRC plus of 333. Fun with small sample sizes.
Remember last year when everybody said Yoan Moncada is 233% better than the average major leaguer? That's what that weighted runs created mm-hmm. plus gets you this year. So, I mean, look. Will it sustain? I don't know. But we knew that the exit velocity was there.
Yeah.
We knew that if he didn't strike out as much, he'd put up above-average two-star quality type numbers. And it's good to see. We talked about this on the telecast yesterday. Everybody comes out of spring training with some sort of plan that they talk about, and you could look at the mechanics, and there's a slight difference or whatever. He has carried, other than one at-bat, I remember, maybe, where he got down 0-2 quickly because of swinging at pitches that were non-fastballs. I don't remember him putting himself in that negative situation through five games. It's a really good sign.
The impressive part to me was that homer you called on our way back from break there, it was an 0-2 pitch, and he found it and pulled it. It was pretty incredible to watch him come back and account like that. You said, I can't remember if Stone asked the question to you or if you asked it to him, but the thing that's the trend that stood out to you most, and without any hesitation, you said Moncada.
Yeah.
And you said what you said here about his approach and about taking it out of spring training and into the regular season, but you seemed, at least I picked up on your impression of him as a human kind of being different. How do you mean that?
So what I mean is, I think, when you have come to the majors as a possible to probable superstar, and then during the season you are just overwhelmed by the badness that's happening to you that you're creating in part, the first thing you want to do, and he went to Arizona in November is what he told me yesterday. He went the month after the season and started working again. I get the sense that he's back to that self-belief of I can be a superstar, and I think he looks different in the way he's carrying himself, just interacting with people and the way he walks around the clubhouse. I know that I'm not giving you specifics, but it's my sense right now that he's back to the not the impenetrable 20s where mm-hmm. like you think you can do anything, but I do feel like on the baseball diamond he feels like he's better than people now, and we didn't see much of that, if any of that, last year.
He was Twinkie guy, right? Was he the guy who was eating
yeah.
200 Twinkies in his heyday?
Allegedly.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I heard Rick Hahn on the air with Lawrence Holmes talking about Eloy Jimenez and much of what they have had to do with his development and what went into the thoughts behind the extension, just how long a process. I mean, going back to last year. And he was very specific about Jimenez regarding conditioning and nutrition. And then I thought about Moncada, too, and about, like, ha-ha, he eats a lot of Twinkies and all that. And then realizing that it's much more meaningful than just sort of a story there when it comes to the commitment that teams are making to guys, putting in place infrastructure to allow them to get the most out of their bodies. And I didn't know if it was that a factor also with Moncada as much as it made for a fun little story?
Yeah, I jokingly, my last question to him in the post game yesterday was, how were the bacon and eggs that you were eating for breakfast? Because I was standing over him talking to him while he was eating this giant bowl of bacon and eggs before the game. But, it, you know, it's better than what we heard the diet was previous. So I think... I don't know how much of that is systematic, and I don't know what he eats on a day-to-day basis. It's a question that I'm absolutely going to ask, though, because I think it's very interesting. I think teams are starting to realize, and I'm talking in generalities for a moment, teams are starting to realize that there are major differences that you can create by doing that sort of thing. I would point people to the story in The Athletic about the University of Virginia and their dedication to sleep cycles from the other day, and how important they feel like it is for their players to get 8.5 to 10 hours. And I do think that's coming as well in baseball, along with all of this other stuff, because you just have to make sure you're maximizing the people. But you have to do it systematically, to your point, Dan. You can't just say, well, you really should do this. I do know that the Sox have, you know, pulled some of the bad food off the plane. I've noticed less bad food of my choices.
Yeah, I was going to say, what are you eating now on the plane? What do you have left?
Like apple chips and jerky. And...
Sounds awful.
No, it's great. I feel awesome. No more gummy bears.
Sure, that's nice. One of my favorite things to watch the last couple of years with the White Sox has been a ticked off Carlos Rodon while he's still in control. Because he can let it get away from himself every now and again when he does get angry. But you can tell sometimes when he's had that start that got away from him, like in the opener, and then comes back and works like he did yesterday, that he's just got this I'm better than you kind of thing that he'll throw at you. I wonder if he's a bit transformed or if he's still going to bounce a little bit back and forth between efforts like you saw in the opener and this last one.
I mean, the opener wasn't great, but it also wasn't one of those, like, explosive, really bad starts. But I do think, I mean, it's funny, if you read his comments after the game yesterday, he was mad that his fastball velocity wasn't where he wanted it to be.
He was spotting the fastball.
No, I know. Yeah. I agree. Yeah, nice. I agree. It was funny because he got, what, 16 swings and misses in the game, and the slider was disgusting, and he was throwing... We talked about the minimum and the maximum velocity on the slider, and there was a substantial difference between the two. He was willing to throw it softer and throw it for strikes. But he was still mad about the fastball velocity after the game. And I'm sure people heard, I don't know, like every now and then when he misses on a pitch, he definitely says something that you cannot say on television.
Oh, yeah.
And he says it very loudly. And it's pretty resonant.
So he operates at a high arousal level. There's no question. He's not a cool customer.
Oh, yeah.
My level of agreement depends on your definition of the word you chose. Just for safety's sake. I completely agree with you.
There's energy coming off of him.
That's what makes him fun to watch for me.
I said it the other day. The first time we did that Beat Benetti thing where we play video games, he like spiked the controller down after I beat him in Mario Tennis.
It happens.
I was like, dude, this is for fun.
No, it's not.
Yeah, and then he walked out of the room. No joke, he walked out of the room and did not come back. Like, it wasn't for video. He left.
I love that guy.
Bow to your sensei. That's great.
I'm Bowser. I shall beat you.
When's the rematch?
Hopefully soon. I mean,
he's got to come down a little, you think?
Yeah, no, I'm concerned about what would happen if I beat him again.
Who picks the game?
I have talked to the players before and made sure it's a game that we're both at least acquainted with.
Oh, and it's always one-on-one? You don't, like, go and play Fortnite as a duo together?
We've not done that.
Okay.
But I would like to. Evidently, Nintendo has pushed back a little bit on our ability to do that.
What?
Why would they do that?
Totally agree. That's why you haven't seen any recently, is the video game people are rather... they're not terribly pleased with how much video we use, which is sad.
I
It is. Because it's fun.
Sad.
But that is so contradictory to a good branding strategy when you're giving them free advertising on an enormous platform.
You would think.
While Nintendo's reeling from any kind of the lack of a console system and dependent on a mobile Switch. That's a video game inside thing.
My yeah, well, what happened yeah. to you there?
Yeah, it's a company floundering is what it is.
Did you work at Babbage's?
Mobile sales. No, not at all. When you watch Lucas Giolito and kind of
can I one
no,
second
no, go ahead yeah,
I was in Huntington, West Virginia for a basketball game yeah. I was walking through the mall. They had both a Babbage's and a GameStop.
I grew up
GameStop
right.
GameStop bought Babbage's. They should have been under the same roof, but in Huntington they had both.
Was that like a demilitarized zone or something?
The news hadn't gotten there yet, probably. That's what it was. We didn't
fine
know. We didn't
know. Like, bought us. The contract. See, I love what you're talking
about. They just got AC/DC last week, so now they're dealing with this news.
Yeah, I
wonder. The power, not the band.
I wonder. I wonder if minor league broadcasters still do, like, walking through the mall in the town was a part of a cultural broadcasting. It's just what you did. And, you know, the players would be in the mall talking to the girl that works at the Sunglass Hut kiosk.
Oh, always.
And then, you know, right?
Always.
Right? And that's, and if you could afford a little bit of the food court with your $20 per diem, you know, you're there and they're like sort of calculating how many tacos they can buy or Orange Julius. But it was that thing. Like, you only know, like, Fargo or Albany, Georgia by the mall.
For me, it was like the most harrowing thing that happened for me regarding, like, just you have to walk places. You think about what Uber and Lyft would do to a minor league baseball life.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. I just thought of that, and my heart sank but also fluttered. We were in Wilmington, Delaware, and we stayed at
the Blue Rocks.
It's Blue Rock Country. So that's how the PA guy did it. Nobody cares. So we stayed.
I was in the organization for a time. The Rockford players would get promoted.
Oh, is that right?
To Wilmington. Oh, yeah, it was a big deal.
How about that? They had Mr. Celery who came out to dance when they hit a home run because they found a celery. They had a nutrition night and they found a piece of celery in the closet way back there and they decided to make him a mascot. So, we had this hotel. It was across the strip mall.
And they were high.
Right.
God, I love minor
throw it down. Yeah. We were across from the strip mall, and it was like a six-lane, near-actual-highway sort of thing. And you'd have, like, 12 seconds to cross. So, you know, I'm not the fastest.
It's like Frogger.
It was human yeah. Frogger.
Right.
But you don't... You don't get a second life, right?
Oh,
if you
okay.
lose in you human actually, Frogger,
is that how that works?
You're just a hood ornament on a Chevy. So I'm
human Frogger is the most dangerous game.
So I'd be like watching very intently the orange hand, and then when it would go off, I would just immediately book it across the street. And with like 5, 4, I was halfway through. I'm thinking like, I hope everyone has a heart.
Right.
On the other side, because I need some help.
And you emerged unscathed.
Barely.
Okay. I'm trying to picture it now.
Don't. You
just realizing, I'm not going to make it.
But I realized I'm not going to make it when the little gray man was up on the light. When he first showed up, I was like, oh, you look positive, man.
I got a chance.
I'm not getting there.
I love the minor league baseball life. It's fantastic. Season minor leagues start today, right?
Yeah, they do. It's a big day for Blue Wahoos and for Dust Devils and for Ice Hogs or
Flying
no, that's
squirrels
an AHL.
And,
Flying Squirrels.
Yeah.
Rock.
No, it really is. This is for any of us that have done it. It's we remember that feeling and being, you know, the nervousness of having to sell sponsorships.
Having to do
and
everything.
Group tickets and maybe even be handed a bucket and a rag to wipe down a section of seats before the game. Like, I need to do my pregame interview. Yeah, not till those seats are clean.
Tarp's got to come out, kid.
Yep.
I do not care.
Yep.
My favorite one was we had one day in Salem, Virginia, we had a large tire company that always gave a lot of money to have their big outing in the right field corner. And there was one day that we just all had to, like, unfold folding chairs and tables. And it was like, all hands on deck. It would rain, and nobody would put the tarp on the field because we were putting out tires, chairs. But, yeah, it's you have to do it, though. You have to make mistakes there in order to know how to do it well, if people think I do it well.
I think most.
That was a setup for you.
I think you're doing fine. Jason, have a great season, and thanks, as always, for stopping by.
Can I soapbox for 30 seconds?
Please, sure.
These minor league baseball people
that
are doing this job, there's a reason we don't have the... It's because the minor league baseball people... We may have the next Vin Scully, but the minor league baseball people have to, like, make copies and stuff and, like, do Photoshop and sell ads. And, like, Dan, how much time do you get to spend on actually learning how to call a game when you were in the minors?
When I was actually listening to my tapes and working on it, not enough.
Yeah, the minor league GMs need to, like, make an hour in the day for their announcers, so we have good young announcers coming up and doing play-by-play. So if you know a minor league general manager, just tell them that.
Well said, man. Well said. Jason Benetti, we've got the midway coming up in just a few.
Have fun at Babbage's, Connor.
We have some fun stories, and I'll get off the soapbox about Nintendo, I guess. It's Bernstein and McKnight, 670 The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
The first half or the second half, you know, it's they're two equal times.
Now, midway.
The midday midway.
One, two.
Midway, the most important of the year.
Three, four.
The most exciting thing on the midway.
Five, six, seven, eight.
Our objective is midway.
9, 10.
You guys gotta meet me halfway out there.
So real, you can almost feel it.
The midday midway with Bernstein and McKnight on The Score.
A lot of Cubs, a lot of Sox so far in our back-to-baseball live broadcast at 12 Prue 130 East Randolph Street. This is our lobby of our building, and we have balloons, and we have people and cameras and food and things. And we're presented by Redemption Rye Whiskey. Rise back, so is baseball. Get your Redemption Rye Whiskey or Bourbon today. And by Sweetwater Tavern and Grill, newly remodeled and reopened on the Mag Mile. Discuss John Lester's comments after another bullpen meltdown last night, where John Lester put it out there. The Cubs... leader, the Cubs player leader, call it what it is, said he thinks they're pressing, that he thinks that they are feeling this pressure to win right now. He said it's hanging over their head a little bit. We're going to talk to Jed Hoyer about that later on. And Jason Benetti stopped by to talk about the White Sox.
Here's a story from the AP that makes you ask yourself, what level of comfort, what level of luxury would you be willing to experience if the other side of the coin was certain death? Actually, that's where we're headed.
I was trying to make a joke.
No, it's really death. A Lithuanian man flying to Italy got a pleasant surprise when he boarded his plane. He was the only passenger. The only passenger. Skirmantas Stirmatius, who was flying from the capital Vilnius to the northern city of Bergamo. That's why I picked this story. There are so many great names. He's flying on a skiing holiday. I don't know.
Yes, you
Vilnius?
Do.
No, I
yes,
don't
that's
know.
Where, that's where Captain Ramius is from in Hunt for Red October.
In northern Italy?
No, Vilnius, Lithuania.
Oh, Vilnius. Is he really? I didn't know
that. Yes, he's Lithuanian.
Some things in here don't react well to bullets, Dan. So anyway, he's flying there for a ski trip. He's on a plane which usually sits up to 188 people. There is nobody else on the plane except for the flight attendants and the pilots. Can you guess, Dan, why Skirmatius was the only person on this plane?
He was being flown to justice somewhere. He's a prisoner.
It was a Boeing 737.
Oh, the bad one?
It was the plane that falls out of the sky. The man risked life and limb to take a skiing trip with tickets that were severely discounted and got a plane that was all to himself.
I thought the planes were grounded.
No, apparently they're still flying around a couple of times. The flight was just 2 hours, and the travel agency had chartered the plane to fly a group home from Italy. And to avoid flying empty, only one-way tickets were sold.
But that's not really luxury, though. If you're being the only guy, that's great. But it's not like you're being pampered. You're not flying like Emirates first class.
So the answer to how much luxury does he need to risk life and limb? Very low.
Not
much. Very low bar of luxury.
from the old dog's new tricks file, tell me where you would categorize this. New Jersey has stopped training state police dogs to sniff out weed. The attorney general told lawmakers Wednesday a pending proposal to legalize recreational marijuana has led police to stop training them to detect the odor of burnt cannabis. And I didn't know that it was burnt. I thought that if you're trying to get it in luggage and elsewhere, it would be unburnt. Now, here's what I didn't know. And I'm wondering, once a dog is trained to do that, can you untrain the dog to do that? The answer is no. He said dogs already trained to detect the scent can be used in other settings where marijuana would still be prohibited, such as jails and schools.
Okay.
It's possible to train dogs to detect marijuana in the future if needed, but it is impossible to untrain dogs who already recognize the odor.
Huh. I did not know that.
Yeah, you've already got them conditioned and trained to do it, and it's amazing, some of these things. I've got a friend, and I've learned this because in the type 1 diabetes community, they have service dogs that can be trained to sense glucose highs and lows.
I've heard about this.
I've got a friend whose daughter is in college, and their daughter lives with a dog in her dorm room who will wake her up. Even if she's got the Dexcom G6, even if she's got all the subcutaneous monitoring and everything as well, the dog has been flawless and just knows better and can tell, say, hey, you know, wake up, you need insulin, or wake up, you need sugar.
Do we know how that works?
I don't know exactly.
What is it that they, like,
they literally will have the person ingest a certain amount of sugar, mm-hmm. and then they have somebody training the dog to tell them what to do when they detect certain things. It's incredible.
That is so cool. This is less cool. According to the Nashville Tree Task Force, the donors of the beautiful cherry blossom trees on First Avenue at Riverfront Park downtown Nashville, were notified Friday that the trees were to be removed due to a deal between Metro Nashville NFL, which is hosting the draft at the location in late April. This outlet reached out to several officials. It's a local Nashville paper, Scoop Nashville. We reached out to several officials late Friday evening when the news broke, but none had responded by Saturday morning when we published. The trees were donated and planted in the honor of late Betty Brown, one of the founding members of the Nashville Tree Foundation.
Of course. It's about damn time.
Well, she needed some trees. In total, 21 trees are being removed starting Monday, this past Monday. It's not clear exactly who approved the deal, but the reason they're being cut down is because the NFL draft doesn't want them there.
Why?
In order to clear sightlines and space for the broadcast itself, the NFL is going to pay Nashville to cut down 21 cherry blossom trees. $10,000 is the price of these 21 trees each. $10,000 in total. I assume that the NFL, although this isn't detailed in the piece itself, it looks like this is going to be part of the follow-up. I assume the NFL will be replanting those trees, but it takes 5 to 10 years for them to grow back to medium size.
That sucks.
And to me, it's like find somewhere else.
Yeah.
Find somewhere else. Like move a half a block down the street. Nashville's a gorgeous town. Anywhere you point a camera, it looks amazing. Except for down the alleyways, maybe. But you're not going to shoot there anyway.
Right. It sounds to me like this is the kind of thing where...
It's stupid.
It's really dumb. It's kind of mean and crass. And I would think that you could easily convene a legislature to prevent this from happening
quickly. Already being cut down. They started on Monday. So I don't know that this is a stop thing. I don't know if anybody's tied themselves to a tree or not.
The NFL held illimitable dominion over all. We are about to see something no human being has ever seen.
Okay.
Okay. Can you think of what it might be?
Three consecutive outs by a Cubs bullpen.
The European Southern Observatory will release the first ever glimpse of Sagittarius A. Sagittarius A is a collapsed star in the center of our Milky Way galaxy.
It's not the Canadian pronunciation of Sagittarius.
Which is what?
Sagittarius A.
Oh, God.
I'm trying to keep up.
But now wait. So think about where I'm headed here. When I say a collapsed star, how well do you know your astronomy? They have captured our imaginations for decades, but we have never, until now, actually photographed a blank.
Black hole?
A black hole.
Cool.
Next Wednesday at several simultaneous press briefings around the world, scientists will unveil humanity's first ever photo of a black hole. This will be of Sagittarius A, the supermassive black hole at the center of the galaxy. But aren't black holes, well, black and thus invisible, so none of our telescopes can actually see them? Yeah. But the image we will see is going to be of the event horizon. That's the edge of the black hole where light cannot escape. And even that will be challenging, as the black hole at the center of the galaxy is, as they say, shrouded in a thick cloud of dust and gas. That's how my children describe me. Even more confounding is that space-time around a black hole is what they call weird.
When they're throwing out weird, you know it's weird.
The actual science of the European Southern Observatory refers to it as weird. The photo may show a dark blob surrounded by a ring of bright light. The black hole research done using the Event Horizon Telescope, which is actually a network of 8 radio observatories around the world. Whatever the announcement is, we are going to see something no human has ever seen before. Press briefings held simultaneously in the U.S., Brussels, Santiago, Shanghai, Taipei, and Tokyo.
Cool. This from Forest Grove, Oregon. An Oregon man is accused of faking a burglary to cover up money sale of Girl Scout cookies. You ask, how low can a human stoop? Well, Brian Couture, 40 years old, of Forest Grove, pleaded not guilty to charges of initiating a false report and improper use of an emergency reporting system. But police said Couture called 911 on March 6th and reported that someone had gotten into his home through a sliding glass door, and that led to a struggle. Couture was unresponsive when police arrived, and he was taken to a hospital. The area was searched, but no suspect was located. Police said Couture later admitted that he had staged the incident. Detectives determined he did it to conceal the theft of money from a nonprofit organization. A Girl Scout spokeswoman confirmed that Couture is the father of a Girl Scout, and there is about $740 in unaccounted cookie sales in connection with the case. This guy faked a burglary of his own home to cover up the theft of $740 from his daughter's Girl Scout troop.
That's overthinking it.
That is low.
And we've got this update. Associated Press, Nashville, Tennessee. The city of Nashville won't cut down 21 ornamental cherry trees to make space for an NFL draft stage,
when
according to
in?
Their mayor, David Briley. This was on Saturday. He said he informed the NFL and the Nashville Convention and Visitors Corp they will have to remove the trees intact and replant them in the city.
Good.
Any trees that are diseased or near death will be replaced with new healthy trees. Same goes for any NFL owners. They were to be cut down, but they are not going to do it. So
after
plans were made public, the Nashville Tree Foundation board president, Nani Nielsen, called the removal incredibly short-sighted for a one-time event. So cooler heads have prevailed indeed in Nashville, and that is the midday midway with the bottom of the hour brought to you by the Chicago Wolves. With 4 remaining home games left, the playoff-bound Chicago Wolves have some great promotional nights. Saturday is both STEM and trading cards night, courtesy of Vienna Beef. Free parking this season, courtesy of Kia. Visit ChicagoWolves.com. We had the voice of the White Sox with us, the voice of the Cubs, Len Casper, will join us next ahead of Jed Hoyer, who will be here at 11. The Bernstein and McKnight Show, talking more baseball coming up. You got the score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station.
Here it comes. And a drive to left. Grand slam time.
Len Casper.
That's win.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, baby.
TV voice of the Cubs.
Here's a base hit. Sauber scores. Here comes a throw. Baez scores. Cubs win.
Slightly above average bassist.
Len Casper playing the guitar really into it.
Len Casper with Bernstein and McKnight on the Score.
Len Casper is on Twitter, at Len Casper. The television voice of the Cubs joins us now on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline. Alpamonte Ford, 500 new and used vehicles to choose from. Len, when does this get fun?
I was just listening to some of those highlights. We haven't nearly had enough of those early in the season, although we have had some offensive highlights to focus on, but it's unfortunately been the other team's offensive performances late in games that have determined many of these. Unfortunately, it's only five, but it feels a lot worse to start the season this way, for sure.
What are the meaningful bright spots that you can pull out of the first five games of this? I mean, there are a few. They exist. I wonder what's spoken to you most.
Well, John Lester, two quality starts, has just been the same old John, and I think that always helps when you know you have that stopper you can rely on every fifth day. The offense, I do think, has had a really good approach. They've hit the ball hard all over the place. It doesn't feel like guys have been too pull happy. I think Wilson Contreras and the work he's done early on, Kyle Schwarber, two guys that were a big part of the conversation in spring training after a rough second half of the offense last year. So that part's been positive, but it's really hard to overlook the walks, the bullpen issues, and aside from John, the short starts from a rotation that should be able to give you a lot more length. And I actually think Joe gave Lester one extra inning last night because of those bullpen issues. I think typically he might have pulled him at his pitch count of, I think it was 106 or something, a little earlier. But right now, you'd like to get a few more outs out of your starter if you can.
Yeah, I thought that, watching John Lester stay in for that extra inning, I figured that knowing Yu Darvish is going to throw the next one probably factored in. Joe's got a lot of things to have to manage around right now, and I don't know. Have you seen bullpens like this where each next guy seems to lose control? And how have you seen other teams kind of handle and manage and get themselves out of this?
It's a good question. By the way, Lester was at 106 after six, but it was after five. I thought he might go to the pen. So just to clarify that, if I've seen bullpens have stretches like this, I've probably tried to forget it. Because the walks just feel a lot worse, even though if you're giving up singles, I suppose it's the same thing, but it does feel like you're not giving yourself a chance to get out of an inning. And I think the biggest thing for me, guys, is that this is not a stuffed bullpen. There are a lot of pens around baseball that can just blow you away with strikeouts. And if you look at this pen, for the most part, you know, Edwards is an exception. I think Pedro Strop is as well. This is not a pen that's going to come in and just blow people away. So they can't be walking the park, because the ball is going to be put in play at some point. So that's, I think, the big issue. It's not just the fact that they're walking a lot of people. It's a combination of a lot of walks and the fact that they just don't have the kind of arms that are going to come in and be able to strike three out after walking three. Carlos Marmol used to be able to do it, but that's a rare thing.
We played the John Lester postgame comment where he said that the urgency is weighing on them. He said it's the idea, the feeling you had to get off to a quick start, now has guys all trying to do everything, both pitchers and hitters. Normally you think, you know, it's just baseball players saying things, but it's Lester, and it matters more because it's Lester. I don't think he was intending a shot at Theo or anything like that, but it's striking nonetheless that he specifically thinks that maybe the whole urgency thing has got some backfire in it right now.
Yeah, you know, certainly his words carry weight, and I can't get in the players' heads in terms of how they're feeling. I would just say that when you struggle and when you have problems like this, we do try to come up with other reasons for it, and I'm not so sure it's the quick start, the urgency, all of that stuff, because every spring, every team, and the Cubs are no exception, talks about we need to get off to a good start. And I think because of the division on paper, the way the Brewers have started this year, 6-1, it does feel like you can't get behind that eight ball early. So maybe some guys are pressing. I would be surprised if five games into the season that is really a big issue in that clubhouse. And I think the sense of urgency and all the things we talked about, that the mantra going into this season, I think it was more about preparing for games, work habits, routines, that sort of thing, as opposed to, you know, if you lose four in a row, the season's over. It's so early to make any sort of grand pronouncements. And, you know, the other part of this with the bullpen is you can't really make big changes right now. You don't have guys who are going to be on that shuttle back and forth between here and Iowa because they have a pretty veteran group, guys who you're not going to be sending out and bringing back every 10 days. You can tweak on the fringes a little bit, but the guys who are here are going to have to figure it out, and they're going to continue to get chances. And, you know, I think they're going to let this thing go a few more weeks before we see any sort of, you know, major changes where they send two or three guys out and two or three guys show up.
Taking a look at the issues around the Cubs with Cubs TV voice Len Casper. Wondering, Len, defensively the Cubs were elite in 2016. I mean, one of the best units that's been out there in quite some time. Are they still capable of being a top five defense? Am I worried some just about six errors and then Bryant bobbling one going to the line a little bit? Are they still capable of doing that in your estimation?
Well, they haven't been very good in this series for sure. I thought they were very good in Texas and excellent throughout spring training. Addison Russell's a really good shortstop, and I think when he's on the field with Javier Baez at second base, I think the Cubs are better defensively. So, you know, if and when Addison comes back, we don't know exactly how much he's going to play, but I do think the Cubs miss his glove on the field. But Jason Hayward, that ball kind of snaked on him, and he played it exactly how you should, and it got by him. I don't expect Jason Hayward all of a sudden to go into a big defensive slump or anything. And the game Monday, you know, there was a point where you're almost like, you know what, guys, get it out of your system. If you're going to make six, why not make 10? And they probably could have been charged with seven errors in that game. As ugly as it was, that to me doesn't represent what the Cubs are all about. And I would be really surprised if at the end of the season we say they didn't catch the ball enough.
Talking with Len Casper, a segment brought to you by Grandview Homes. They will buy your home as is and fast. GrandviewHomes.com for more info. You know what I find kind of funny, if not a little bit ironic, is that it seems to me that this would be a perfect time for something silly. A perfect time for something stupid, just to remind everybody, just as to break the tension a little bit, where like old Joe Madden would have rolled out the petting zoo or something. It's like the football team that everybody can tell that they're gritting their teeth too much, and the quarterback goes back to the huddle and sings 99 bottles of beer on the wall. I mean, this team kind of needs a laugh right now, and they've sort of been told that no, that's we don't want that right now. Be serious. Be urgent.
Well, it does feel a little tight around the club, you know, in terms of a lot of the questions that are being asked. I hear what you're saying, Dan. I think probably the best thing that could happen in the next 24 hours is Yu Darvish goes out and throws six innings, gives up one run. That's probably the best thing that can happen. You know, I do think these guys enjoy themselves. Anthony Rizzo, very heads-up base running. To add that insurance run, and he was laughing and yelling at Brian Butterfield, who clearly gave him a little bit of a heads up on a pitch that might get away from the catcher. So it feels like these guys should be sulking and hanging their heads and kicking doors, but I think they know they're good. It's still really early, and I don't sense that internally it's as tight as it feels around the team.
Len, you've been a big proponent of David Bote. I've liked a lot of what I've seen. Some struggles last year, but a contract just recently. I don't remember a player, maybe I missed it, I don't remember a player with so little service time going to an organization about a contract, and it seems that what's happened here. I would imagine you think the Bote signing is a pretty solid one for them.
I think it's a no-lose for the club, and it's probably a no-lose for David. This is life-changing money for a guy who had spent six full years at the minor league level. Gives him some security with his family. And then from the Cubs' perspective, at the very worst, you know, it's a total of, what, $15 million over the course of 5 years or so. That is not something that would ever hamstring an organization like this. And I think those conversations have probably been had on some sort of surface level with just about all their young players, and I think the Cubs would be very amenable to doing this with a lot of their guys. You're starting to see it around baseball. The Acuna deal, 21 years old, he was the youngest player to sign a deal worth $100 million. In this day and age of very weird free agency, I think you're going to see some more younger players do it. And while it's not a lot of money, I think the commitment to David Bote shows you that the Cubs believe that the work he has given them at the big league level, not only with the bat, but the defensive versatility, and just he's a heads-up baseball player, the kind of guy you like having on your roster. It's good for him, and I think it's good for the club too. And I'm very happy for him. He's a great guy.
All right, Len, thanks. We'll be watching and listening as the Cubs look to get it turned around.
Don't sound so depressed, Dan. It's going to be
I'm
okay.
I'm good. Thanks for the
response. You sound more apprehensive than depressed, actually.
Yeah, I get it. Apprehensive is probably right. It's urgency is what it is. Yep. I'm urgent. Yep. Thanks.
No, I get it. Thanks, guys.
Len Casper, voice of the Chicago Cubs, the general manager of the Cubs, joins us next. Jed Hoyer will be on Bernstein and McKnight on The Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.